Welcome, everybody, to the Zion Experience. I'm Jim Shaw. I forget Jordan.
Jordan
Frank, the other co-host, is on.
I'm here.
You know, we really don't prepare for this.
You know, we're better off to come.
About all you're going to get.
That's what I got.
I have ham and cheese loaf in the refrigerator for days like today.
With that, let's get back into it.
Let's get in our groove. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the Zion Experience, or TZE as we call it. I've got an exciting guest or an exciting conversation set up for us today as we continue our ZSG Thought Leadership Series, where we've interviewed a real wide range of individuals that make the supply chain go round. So we're on. I've lost track of how many we've done on this, but I'm excited to introduce our guest, Jake Sullivan. Jake has recently joined Zion. He's got a really diverse background, and we're excited to do this podcast and ask you some questions, Jake. So welcome before I introduce you.
Thanks, Jim.
He's a bearded brother like I am. So his beard's a little bit better than mine, a little bit longer than mine. But so this time last year, Jake, I grew it way out because I was running the I do a crazy challenge every year to myself, or it's crazy to me, but we did the rim to rim to rim in the Grand Canyon. I ran it last year and I had a beard that was about twice the length of yours down. But then I started to look like I didn't have a house to live in, and it was not being kept as well as it should. So I shaved it off, and here I am. This is the medium version beard. So welcome. Have we done a podcast before, Jake?
No, I have not.
So we do a lot of these like this. So you're going to enjoy it, and our audience is going to enjoy it. So if you're listening for the first time, welcome. If you're a returning guest, and we're glad to always have you back. And like I said, this is another episode in our series of the ZSG Thought Leadership that we're putting on. And let me introduce you to Jake. So Jake Sullivan, he's currently working in a field service and systems lead technician role with Zion. He's been with us almost 2 months now, I think, and we've known Jake for a long time. He's got over 6 years of experience in facility management and maintenance. Previously, he's worked, he's got a little diverse skill sets. Previously, he was at Radial, which is a 3PL, and he was a senior regional maintenance manager. He oversaw several facilities, and we'll let Jake tell us more about that. He's been a maintenance supervisor at Boar's Head. And he spent 4 years in the U.S. Navy. So Jake is what we call a CRL, a Certified Reliability Leader, through the Association of Asset Management Professionals, which basically recognizes his expertise in just taking care of assets that make the supply chain go round, in reliability engineering, inventory management, team leadership, and problem solving. So Jake's passionate about continuously improving and innovating operations. And he really leverages his technical knowledge and industry best practices to drive operational excellence, if I can talk. So, Jake, that's a fancy way of describing you, but anything that I missed or you want to add?
No. No, you pretty much hit it. I did, obviously, the time at Radial, the senior manager, and then before that, Boar's Head as a supervisor. Boar's Head's kind of where the beard started to get long. We worked in a refrigerator, so it was nice to have then. But I just been pretty busy last few months. Haven't been to a barber, but
gotcha. That's all right.
But before that, I spent kind of about 10 years working at State Electric Supply Company, which is a electrical distribution company. They're pretty good size one, from normally ranked somewhere around top 10 in the nation. Worked everywhere there, from the warehouse all the way to outside sales. And I think that my time spent there, you know, and before that I did a lot of facilities maintenance and government contracts. And then also did a lot of equipment operating ODNR projects, stuff like that. Been around the block a little bit. But you know, my time there at State kind of
kind of formed, really honestly formed kind of where I'm at as far as my leadership, and then how I approach maintenance when I got back into maintenance. You know, it's been a journey, we'll put it that way.
I bet. And I don't know that the way that we described it, I'm fixing my Zion Solutions group in the background here.
Okay.
I got to do it, but I'm gonna make it all in the back so it shows up real pretty in my back monitor here, Jake. And so a fancy way of describing, like, it's always, I remember the first time somebody read my bio and I'm like, well, yeah, man, I did that. But for the listeners out there, I think what we've tried to do is we've had operational leaders, Jake. We've certainly interviewed some of our own team and their experience. We've interviewed partners. We've really tried to get a broad array of individuals that make the supply chain go. And Jake actually is on site. Jake's one of those guys that when something's broke, the better way to describe him would be is when something's broke, he's the guy that can come in and fix it. You can troubleshoot it. You have the technical aptitude to know whether it's a systemic issue. It could be a mechanical hardware issue. But you got the technical expertise to come in and troubleshoot it. And a lot of that just comes through experience and knowing to ask the right questions. And I'm not gifted in mechanical fixes. I'm gifted in being able to watch somebody like you tell me how to fix something mechanical and watch a video, but I am not, I'm not gifted to walk in and be able to know and look and determine and troubleshoot electrical items. And so it's been a work in progress for me, but Jake is a guy when something's down in these big warehouses that we design and build, he is the guy that has the team that can come in and get you back up. So it's critical. And so my first question, Jake, really, we just kind of flow through and ask questions. But my first one I want to know in just your view on is, what do you think distinguishes an exceptional person that's a leader in maintenance and service from one that's just maybe competent in the daily field or the facility operation? So what's the difference, exceptional versus, okay, you do your job? Because I know you've been around a lot of great leaders. We've shared and had discussions about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
What do the exceptional ones look like?
He's about 5'8". So going back to what I was saying, working at State Electric, working in a sales kind of job there, you know, they did a program when I was there. It was year long leadership program. And it was almost like going through boot camp. There was, I think, about 14 or 15 of us throughout the network that went through this. And it was kind of like some boot camp leadership. But what I picked up from there and what I carried on with me when I went to Boar's Head and went to Radial, you get – everybody's used to the old grumpy maintenance guy that when you call him, you're like, oh, great, here he comes. So – the one thing that I've tried to carry over, and I see it in a few people, love to see it in more, but is that service mindset when you're in facilities and you're in maintenance, you know, just treating it like you're in a service industry, because you're giving a service to operations as, you know, as if you're internal facilities. And seeing that mindset in people is probably one of the biggest, you know, big things that distinguishes people in my field from being good leaders and great leaders.
I think it's a really good question. We've all, some people that are listening right now probably know, like, they cringe a little when they have to call the maintenance guy and get the scolding and tell them, why did you do it? And I'm busy. And why did you? And I've seen service and maintenance really change and evolve over the last decade, I think, Jake. I think the technologies we're using are moving beyond the people that are just, you know, turning a wrench and, you know, more the traditional maintenance view that you've got to more of, you have to be dynamic to troubleshoot. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to understand a little bit of the software side instead of just the mechanical side because of how much the additional everything hardware anymore is running off software. And so you got to tie the two together, and then you got the electrical equation in the middle of it. But you hit on a point, like one of the brand promises, we had three that we talk about a lot at Zion, and I think you embody that, is to deliver that memorable experience. We are service-based. We want, you know, when something's broke, you usually don't catch people at their best. They've got a timeline that's maybe not being made. They've been there too long. They've got something that's out of their control that needs fixing. And so to be able to come in and not put your cape on, but be able to come in and really help people, you can approach that like, that's a privilege to me. We want to be able to help it. We want to be able to walk people through and help them in their time of need. And that, I've had different ones throughout my career. There were some at radio that I worked with, and I'm like, they're not easy to work with. And then I had others that I worked with. It's like, it was a real pleasure, because it's not me against you. It's not the service maintenance guy against the operations or whatever. It's, we got a problem. Let's get in the middle of it. Maybe it's a fire. It's usually at the worst time that it could be. Maybe it's, you know, not convenient, but it's like, get in the center of it. Let's figure out and work on it together. Let's divide and conquer. And I think you're right. You, a leader teaching others to have that mindset, as you are there to service, you are there to help. We're here to alleviate pain is ultimately what we are, and do it with a smile on our face, or do it with, you know, let me explain to you. What about the maintenance guys? Like, sometimes there's ones that just fix it, and then there's ones that are able to teach someone to fix it themselves again, the teaching them the fish mentality. So where do you stand on a leadership wise of, there's even different ways to fix it, right? What's your thoughts on that?
So I'm big one on training, big one. And that probably goes back to being in the military, working on helicopters. You know, you were always training. And, you know, I've always tried to reach out, get as much training as I can, you know, just be as informed as I can. And I love walking people through fixes. You know, walking through, having them understand what it is that was wrong, and trying to relate that, you know. It's nice when you get that, you see the light bulb go off in someone's head that, you know, they understand, oh wow, I understand what you guys are going through. You know, having that shared experience it goes a long ways. You know, and I'll talk someone all the way through a fix. You know, if you stay in there, I'm going to talk to you about it. So, very, very big on that aspect.
I think it's some really good points. So training and just educating the end user, because a lot of times some of the repairs, at least my experience, Jake, like, there's ones that you really need the expertise. And then there's others, just, I wasn't aware. A photo eye gets knocked out of alignment. You know, air maybe gets turned off. And I call it my top 10, because I'd never in my career previously to joining our last integration company, where we met and we did a lot of work prior to Zion, I took over the execution team. So we were installing the systems in the field, and I'd never done it. I'd always been an industrial engineer where you tell me a number and I could torture a number. I could come up with a design, but I never physically installed it and done that portion. We had a whole nother group that handled that called plant engineering at UPS, which is where I'd spent most of my time learning. So it was drinking from the fire hose, the first, you know, two big installs we did. But I found out that, like, there's a top 10 things that you can do for yourself. So I made a top 10 list of, hey, if it's not, the conveyor's not working, did we check the photo eye? Did we check power? Did we check air? Has it been similar in yours? I mean, I think training goes into that. Like, the more you can have operations troubleshoot themselves, or the user, end user.
Yes, 100%. You know,
my computer do it again.
Oh.
Did I go away? Did I disappear for a minute?
Just got a little glitchy there for a second.
Nope. Okay, gotcha. My computer did the screen of death over here, and it came back. So Amelia's, I'm seeing her in the backstage saying I'm good. But anyway, my question is, do you see, like, are there common areas that you could give operators advice on? Like, what have you seen? I think some people would probably be interested in hearing that. So let's say the top 5 to 10 things, Jake, conveyor and in 3PL operations, what have you seen that need fixing?
It's always a photo eye. Always, you know, number one is going to be a photo eye.
It's a photo eye.
Yeah. And it's normally one that someone's standing somewhere that they shouldn't be standing, and they're standing there for a reason that really doesn't make any sense. And they bump photo eye, and then it throws the whole thing off. That's one of the biggest ones. And you know, as systems are coming around and getting more updated, and even older systems, you know, you always had some kind of HMI that, you know, showed you where all this stuff was. But what I find is a lot of operations people aren't properly trained on utilizing their systems, you know, operating HMI or operating system or whatever. And they don't, you know, they always tell you where your errors are. And that's one thing I've always pushed is for, you know, in any of my facilities is to work with the operations people and to teach them, to show them what they can do for themselves. And, you know, and then you always get the operations people that then take it a little too far. And then you see things that just boggle your mind and you're like, how did you come up with doing that? And why didn't you just call us? It's a small fix. We could have done this, but for the most part, you know, teaching, working with operations, working with, you know, the people that use the machines every day, you know, helping them understand, you know, that's a big, I've been a big proponent of, you know, people putting in actual operators to run, you know, certain areas or certain parts of the machine to take care of themselves, to get that ownership. And then, you know, because at the end of the day, it's how many boxes can you get out the door? And, you know, you need that equipment to run as efficiently as possible. And getting key people in key places is always the best route to do it.
Yeah, for sure. And you bring up a good point on the HMI. So the human machine interface, a lot of these WCS, WES companies have wonderful tools that allow the technology to show you down to the photo eye and where, which one's blocked, which one, what's causing a jam, why something shut down or some type of a motor fault. They give you some pretty comprehensive and detailed troubleshooting issues. And I thought about that. One of the things we try to do is teach the users what the HMI is showing them and show them, like we use Matthew's director, and you bring up the HMI and you show it, and there's thought put in to, usually it's by the panel area and it's by section and it's labeled really well to where you can do troubleshooting. And that's access you can give to your operators where they can check it. Sometimes it's just human error of not understanding what the photo eye or the scanner is supposed to read. And, you know, the box is put on improperly. So there's a lot of things we can do that how many times have you gotten, well, the system's not working. The system's not working. And it's like, no, it's you start the troubleshooting process. So we had one that, and you've probably had this happen before, we were commissioning and going live and the spiral kept rejecting. So it was a replenishment area for a PIC module. And we had put in all the conveyance. We had actually helped them with the design of the PIC module and helped them with slotting inside of it. So we had a little more involvement in terms of how the system's supposed to work, because the system's really, you know, it's product people and it's the machine, right? You got our people, software, and the hardware, whatever you want to call it. So we were involved in all three of those are critical to make a system work. So the reject, this line kept rejecting, and I can still see that the supervisor, she was so upset that my system, she came walking at me, pointing her finger at me, and my system wasn't working. And she used a couple other colorful words. And I'm like, well, let's time out one. Let's find out what's going on. And so we ended up troubleshooting it, and it wasn't the scanner. It wasn't the conveyor. It wasn't the spiral. It went all the way back to where the label was supposed to be placed on the inbound box that was going into the system. Part of it was they were being placed in the wrong location, so therefore the system was set up to only read it in the bottom left-hand corner. And guess what? If it's not in the bottom left-hand corner, the system's not going to read it. And then the other piece was guess what was happening on the slotting? Traditional slotting is you say a SKU goes into a location and it's got a capacity, right? So a box, if the different box sizes, you can only get 8 boxes in it, then you can only physically fit 8 boxes in it. Well, they hadn't set up their min and max is what they call it on this, on the locations. So the walking down and your system's not working at all. We troubleshooted it back and found out, and we worked through it. It worked out great, right? But the issue wasn't the system, wasn't the scanner, wasn't the conveyor, wasn't power. It was we hadn't set up mins and maxes on the actual physical location. So you get it. You run into a lot of those in my experience when systems are down or when you're having a problem and you got to work through it. And so I think it takes a mind like yours that's able to walk through the steps of what's wrong. Sometimes it is the hardware. Sometimes it is the scanner. But have you had any similar situations like that? Any fun stories?
Nothing that comes directly. I mean, just there's hundreds of them that come flooding in. But it does. And then, you know, and one of the biggest things that, like, I try to push to any of the guys that's worked for me is, you know, the 5 whys. You know, why. And, you know, the hardware part of it is normally pretty easy to step through and figure out real quick. You know, is it a photo why? Is it this? Is it this? You can eliminate those real fast. You know, and that goes back to just understanding of the system and, you know, going back to teaching the operations people how to, you know, what they're looking at and, you know, how they're working with it. Those are normally pretty easy to get through. And it does help when you get cooperation from operations to understand that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's keep asking some questions here. See if one lights you up here and you get some inspiration on it. So how do you, similar to this theme, we've kind of talked all around this, but how do you encourage problem solving with your technicians, your maintenance and service teams? Knowing you got to balance the operations, got to keep running, it's got to be efficiency, there's got to be uptime, but what's your process for when you have the team underneath you? Like here's your method or training on how they go about problem solving.
You know, it
really started with 5 whys. You've already kind of said this. Yeah. Ask why, right? Find the root cause, do discovery, whatever.
Yeah, and that's the fundamental part of it. But, you know, creating a sense of ownership with them, you know, giving them that sense of ownership in what they're doing in their jobs. That's always the best way to get them motivated, get them moving, and getting them utilizing those tools, the 5 whys and whatever else they want to, you know, whatever else you're using for problem solving. You gotta really have to include them into the decisions, you know, and get them involved, get them that sense of ownership. You know, it's that when they have that, it just everything kind of comes together. You know, when they feel, you know, this is my piece of equipment, it's my name that's on keeping this thing running, you know, so, you know, what do I want to look like at the end of the day is the kind of mentality I try to instill in them and get them to that point.
Gotcha. That's a really good answer. And I think that's anything in life is how do you get people to come to the table and meet you in the middle and take ownership. And it's not somebody else's problem. It's our problem, right? Instead of, and somebody's got to see it through. And so the real good ones that I've worked with, like you, they bring that ownership. They show up with that, you know, that just comes with the package of you come in and it's not a concern. You're concerned with fixing the issue versus where was the blame, who was to blame, why we got here, whatever. It's like, let's fix the issue and we own it together. So I think it's a really good question. Here's one we've asked a lot of different leaders. I'm interested in your thoughts on it, myself included, is what's your approach to decision-making when there's really no clear right answer? So you don't know, you got a bunch of solutions potentially. None of them are great. None of them's just black and white. It's a clear answer. So when you come upon that, maybe it's in the frame of look at it through the lens of the maintenance side or just Jake's everyday life side. So you got to make a decision as a leader of your family. You got to make a decision as the leader of the maintenance and technician team. But you don't really have a great choice. So how do you go about processing that, Jake?
It's, you know, it comes down to the hard data. You know, from a maintenance lens, and even bleeds over into your life. You know, look at the facts. Look at, you know, push everything else out. You know, and look at what are the facts. What data do you have? You know, if it's a machine that's down or whatever it is, you know, you want to look at as much data as you can. And I know firsthand how bad data has kind of been collected over the years throughout facilities. You know, there's industries that do it very well. I mean, there are, you know, warehousing and distribution really kind of, you know, it's been around for a long time, but, you know, the automation side of it over the last 25, 30 years has really started coming around. And, you know, it's not just a matter of, hey, conveyors and, you know, a sorter or whatever, and, you know, kind of how long will, you know, just keep it running, don't worry about it, reactive maintenance style, you know. And then now with equipment coming around like it is and being so heavily ingrained and involved, and you rely on it for everything, you know, that data collection is crucial when you're trying to make decisions, especially decisions, you know, where something you've never run into, or something, you know, you've got to make a hard decision on. You got to be able to pull that data. You got to be able to look at the facts. And even if there's not a lot there, you have to look at whatever you have, whatever you can, and base, you know, sometimes it's just an educated guess, but you got to try to break it down and push everything out that is around it. You know, yeah. all the chatter that comes back in, and, well, you know, for example, you know, like you have operations saying this thing's a piece of crap. Why? And there it goes back to the why, you know, and then right. you gotta get through all of that, you know, fog to get to the real answer and break it down. And honestly, it comes with patience. A lot of patience.
Yeah. Yeah. I can only imagine just patience and experience and knowing how to walk in and truly get down to the real why. Right. Mm-hmm. So I like that answer. I've only got a couple more, and then we're nearing the end, Jake. You're doing a great job. Thanks for joining us today. Especially your first podcast. I remember my first one. I don't know how many we're in now, but it's just a conversation. Now I feel like I just sit down and get to have conversations with friends and people smarter than me and people I can learn from. So if you had some advice to give out to somebody new, would you guide them into the maintenance, and how much has it changed since you really started your maintenance journey and technician journey? I think it's one of those, and I've said this about some others, is like I told you about the marketing team last week, is it's a lot of jobs that get done in the shadows. They're super critical, but they don't get the glamour that the sales might get. They don't get the glamour that, you know, maybe the executive leadership gets. They don't get the glamour of out front, right? It's the offensive line. I think big Drew, you and Drew talk a lot, but if the offensive line in there, the quarterback can't do his job, but nobody's interviewing the offensive line after a football game usually, right? So I look at maintenance and technicians and the service and kind of the lifetime services division. It's necessary, but I don't know that it gets the glamour. It's kind of at the end. And so long-winded way of asking is, like, have you seen maintenance and technician work change since you've been involved with it? And what's your thoughts on a young kid in high school today? Would you guide them into doing something like this?
Oh, 100%. You know, it goes back to technology. As fast as things are coming around, you know, it's a great field to be in, if, you know, especially going forward, because everyone's always going to need
a technician to work on something here soon. If I was talking to a younger kid coming out of high school or something like that, I would definitely push them more towards understanding of electrical and, you know, the mechanical, definitely pick up some mechanical, be a well-rounded tech, you know, and be able to apply all the disciplines. I think, some of the terms I've heard about, that type of person is mechatronic technician.
Yeah, I just was thinking that when you were saying it. Yeah,
that one cracks me up. But 100%. I would tell people to get into that field. You know, I mean, you can go to technical college for 2 years, pick up an electrical certification, mechanic welding, or mechanical certification, and you're not $150,000 in debt, and you come out probably making $100,000 a year.
Yeah, so
it's definitely going to be the way of the future here soon.
Yeah. I think it's an outstanding career path for some of these. I think there was a lot of times people pushing that you have to go get these college educations that maybe necessarily, and you know, it was looked down upon on some of the more of the trades, but I've got a son, and if he's interested in doing something in the trades, mechanical trades or something, you can make a good living, and it's rewarding work. It's, mm-hmm. It's challenging work. And like you said, it's not like we're not going to get more automated. We are only going to get more automated. So the ability to be able to service these machines that are helping us humans do what we do best, which is think, instead of just moving stuff around or moving from point to point, there's going to be a need for it in the future. Well, let's get towards the end. I've got one more question, then I'm gonna have a little fun question with you. You're doing a great job. Again, thanks for having you on the podcast. And have you had any influences, or I guess, have you had somebody in your career that's greatly influenced you, or you had a mentor that really shaped your approach today with your mm-hmm. background, your diversity? Does anybody stand out?
Couple, actually. I'd mentioned going through that leadership academy at State Electric, and we had an action coach. His name was Dave Beam. He was the one that ran the program for us. And he was going through that class. Like I said, it was a year long. We'd do a week in one of the branches every month, and just all of us would have a whole week together, and then we'd have a whole bunch of stuff we did during the off month. But he was a great influence, very good action coach. He was really good at making you think. And, you know, he wasn't a salesman. He wasn't any of that stuff, but he could meet you in the middle. He was one, you know, and that's one of the biggest things I picked up on from him was, there's that book that was like 1968 or something. Yeah, I'm okay. You're okay. Book. And that one just resonated with me, you know. How do I go into conversations with people? You know, am I going in there with the right mindset? And I think about that every time I go, every time I talk to anybody. It helped me in my personal life with my family and, you know, the whole everything. But that was a big one. The big one was probably my last boss was a pretty good boss. He was a really good boss, but the guy before him, he was an exceptional person. Still is. He's a great leader and just an inspirational person to be around and work with, I should say. But picked a lot up from him. And, you know, and also my family, you know. My mom, my dad, and hell, even my brother. He's about 13 years younger than me, but man, he's something. So
that's pretty cool. Yeah, we all find those people in our life that make us they inspire us to do more. They inspire us to be better. They give us something to look up to and chase after. And if you've never watched Matthew McConaughey, I think it was his Oscar speech, as he talked about the three people in his life that he was chasing and what he was looking after. It's a quick, short little speech, yeah. But it's really good. You'd like something like that. And we built Zion's been built on the foundation of, you know, Zion at its premise was David was promised heaven on earth. And it was a spot to look up to and inspire, you know, to look to. And it was Mount Zion. And it's eventually where Jerusalem was built. And and then Chuck talks about all the time, you know, we're trying to pick people up and we're inspiring others. And so that's pretty cool to hear that you've had somebody in your career and continue to have people in your career that inspire you to do more and do better. So, all right, well, we're done with the one part of the thing and the conversation. Then we always have a fun question. You may not think it's as fun as I think it is, but I think it's kind of fun. So, if you could swap roles, and you may not be able to answer, if you got to go back to radio or somewhere else, that's fine. I think you could probably answer this for Zion, but if you could swap roles with someone else in Zion or a previous organization for a day, who would it be and why?
And my initial thought is one of my texts just to take a break. That's a good one. You know, I'd probably go back to Dave. And, you know, had like teaching that class and, you know, yeah, I have nowhere near the knowledge that man has about leadership, but, you know, just being able to be in an environment and teach like that, it would be fun. It is fun, you know, anytime I've done anything like that.
Yeah.
So
well, that's cool. So we'd be an action coach. Jake.
Something like that.
Jake, the action coach. That's what we would have.
Like I said, I don't have near the knowledge to do something like that, but.
Yeah, I think you might shortchange yourself in terms of you've got a lot of what we call it a bunch of different stuff, but you've got a lot of that real life experience. Like you've been on the floor. I call it a concrete MBA, or I tell customers sometimes that we're just a bunch of old concrete walkers that I grew up on the concrete. You know, I don't sit in an office and have the big executive suite and that, you know, the glass wall is I want to be out there with the people. I want to be out there where the systems are, we're designing or being installed and running. Cause that's where I'm at home. That's what I like doing. I don't get to do it as much as I'd like to, but there's something to be said about having that experience in life. And I'd say, I know you've got it. So Jake, we're at the end. We really appreciate it. Amelia's going to come on here in a minute and play a little jingle to get out. But for all our listeners out there, we appreciate you all. Thanks for sticking with us. And Jake, you did a wonderful job. We're certainly glad that you chose Zion and chose to work with us and are taking care. And, you know, we don't have a B team here at Zion, and you perfectly fit that as part of our brand promise of taking care and delivering memorable experiences and guiding intelligent change to all the people we're trying to help every day. At the end of the day, we come in, we try to leave a positive impact on the lives of those we touch. And it's people like Jake Sullivan that we're privileged to work with that does that for us and Zion and our customers. So thank you, Jake. Appreciate you being on here, man.
All right, Jim, I appreciate it.
Yeah. We want to thank you all for listening to another episode of the Zion Experience. Please make sure you subscribe to our show on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcast. If you have any ideas or topics you'd love to hear about or maybe for a future episode, please let us know. Send us something in the comments. We appreciate you all, and we'll see you here next time.